Okay, well, whenever, Mr. Simon, you're ready, we'll hear from you.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal, if I may. At issue before the Court this morning in this diversity case is a New Mexico Statute 56-7-1, which is commonly referred to as the Construction Anti-Indemnity Statute in New Mexico. So the situation we have here is a general contractor, Bingham Construction, employing a subcontractor, High Desert Roofing, on a construction project in Farmington, New Mexico, wherein a High Desert employee fell through an opening in the building and was killed. Bingham and High Desert had signed a contract that said High Desert's going to indemnify and defend and insure Bingham against these claims, even if they are Bingham's fault, essentially. So because of that, Bingham, with respect to the claims against it, basically hands the baton to High Desert and says, this is your problem. High Desert, which is insured by my client, First Mercury Insurance Company, obviously hands the baton to its insurance carrier and says, take care of this. The problem is that the statute in question knocks the baton out of Bingham's hand. There is no baton. There is no obligation.
There's no policy that was issued in exchange for a premium?
There was a policy that was issued to High Desert in exchange for a premium. There was no premium to insure, there was no premium charged to insure Bingham.
Well, Bingham was included on the policy as an additional insured.
Bingham was not a named insured under the policy.
That's not what she asked.
I understand. I think there's a distinction, but a named, I apologize, a named additional insured.
Do you dispute that under the terms of the policy, Bingham is an additional insured if we didn't have this statute?
I agree.
Okay, so let's not play games.
Sure. No, I would agree that they are in an additional insured. However, I would disagree that this particular claim would be covered under this policy, even though they were an additional insured under the policy, and that's because of the language of the policy. But in any event, the statute that we're dealing with, the New Mexico statute, is somewhat broader. It's broader and contains some additional language as opposed to some other similar statutes in other states, such as Oklahoma and Utah, that the court may be more familiar with. The trial court found correctly that High Desert could not contract to indemnify Bingham against Bingham's own negligence, and made that ruling as a part of its opinion. It then went on, however, to distinguish between indemnifying them and naming them as an additional insured under the policy, and ruling that even though by statute they could not indemnify them, they could still name them as an additional insured under the policy. I think the problem with that is it ignores subsection F of the statute that specifically addresses this situation. It says, as used in this section, indemnify or hold harmless includes any requirement to name the indemnified party as an additional insured in the indemnitor's insurance coverage for the purpose of providing indemnification for any liability and otherwise allowed in this section.
Right. The only liability that's not allowed is to insure against your own negligence. So the court
read
that and said, since I look at the language 56-7-1A, and it says a provision in a construction contract,
yes,
will be unenforceable.
Correct.
The court said the part of the instruction contract that's unenforceable is insurance of your own negligence. Everything else is fine.
Correct.
Okay.
The issue here, and it's an important issue that perhaps the court mix some different concepts that, in terms of the allegations that were brought against Bingham Construction. It is conceivable, and it is hypothetical, that Bingham could have been sued for High Desert's negligence, but it wasn't. And a hypothetical...
Okay, so now we're talking about whether the policy was triggered at all, not whether the policy was not effective under the statute. Is that right?
I think the answer is both.
Okay.
Because of the language of the policy. The language of the policy is not dissimilar to the language of the statute. The policy says we defend identify the additional insured against liability for the policyholder's negligence. So in other words, it's essentially one and the same. It's just part of it's in the statute and then that's sort of repeated in the insurance policy. But the issue, it is, as I say, it is hypothetically possible that a plaintiff could sue Bingham for liability for High Desert's negligence. That's theoretically possible. And one example of that I mentioned in the brief, we have a legal theory in New Mexico, the inherently dangerous activity doctrine, that says if somebody employs an independent contractor to do something that's inherently dangerous, the employer, the contractor, and the contractor are jointly and severally liable. So that's a situation, a hypothetical situation, where the general contractor could, in fact, be held liable for the negligence of the subcontractor. However, there was no such allegation pleaded in this particular case. The only allegations in this case, regardless of what allegations could have been made, the only allegations that were made in the underlying case was that Bingham itself was negligent and that Bingham was responsible solely for its own negligence.
Didn't Bingham take the position that the employee himself was negligent, as was High Desert, because High Desert knew there was a hole in the roof, that there was
yes.
just plywood over it, and that he wasn't tied off, and he was negligent. So there were those counter-arguments made.
There were those arguments made, and I think that confuses the issue here. Would there be evidence that High Desert was negligent? Almost certainly there would be enough evidence of that to get to the jury if we assume hypothetically that the case had been tried. Was there evidence that Mr. Polito himself was negligent? Well, yes. I mean, presumably that argument would have gone to trial. Had this case gone to trial, the jury in New Mexico would be given three lines of comparative fault. It would be High Desert, Bingham, and Mr. Polito. I think Cincinnati's position and the court's opinion confuses that. The fact that there was evidence that High Desert was negligent and evidence that Mr. Polito was negligent confuses the issue of what is to be indemnified vis-a-vis Bingham. So,
well, I don't know if when you say indemnified, I don't know if you're talking about coverage under High Desert's policy, because under what I think your adversary is saying is that not for purposes of indemnification, but in terms of interpreting the High Desert insurance policy, that the endorsement covers the additional insured for bodily injury that is caused in whole or in part by your acts, High Desert's acts or omissions. Not your negligent acts or omissions, but your acts or omissions. And if Cordova, I can't remember his name.
Polito, yes.
If he stepped into the hole, well, we won't be hard-pressed to say he may or may not have been negligent, but we won't be hard-pressed to deny that it was caused in whole or in part by an employee of High Desert. Not to mention High Desert's instructions to the gentleman to go do exactly what he did.
Yes.
So in interpreting the policy, why should we interpret this to include some unexpressed gloss that the act or omission has to have been negligent?
Negligent, because in order for there to be anything to indemnify, you know, for there to be any obligation for First Mercury to pay Bingham, Bingham would have to be negligent.
Where in the endorsement on First Mercury, page 179, does it say that?
It does not say that in the endorsement. But in order for there to be any liability, for there to be any judgment against Bingham, that judgment would have to be based on Bingham's negligence. Let's say, hypothetically, the jury awards $5 million, and they say Bingham is 50% at fault, Polito is 25% at fault, High Desert is 25% at fault. Well, the judgment against Bingham is $2.5 million. The amount to be indemnified is $2.5 million. And the indemnification is based on the negligence of Bingham. There, under New Mexico law, as this case was pleaded, there is no theory under which Bingham could be held liable for anyone's negligence other than Bingham's.
And I don't want to monopolize your time, but let me ask you about that, because I'm really not grasping. I grasp what you say.
Sure.
You express it very well. But, okay, let's say Bingham was negligent.
Yes.
Okay. So there has to be negligence on the part of Bingham to trigger coverage, okay?
That's
what you're saying? Let's accept that. But still, what you're saying is that unless the third party, the plaintiff in the underlying litigation, had claimed that High Desert was negligent, then that would preclude coverage for Bingham as an additional insured. And that brings us back to the endorsement.
Yes.
So what I don't get is what textually within the policy would insulate the applicability of the First Mercury policy because of the absence of a third-party claim against High Desert for being negligent. I don't get that.
Right.
And I don't understand what your argument has to do with that. So
sure.
Help me.
The issue is, in order for there to, I know what Your Honor is saying, that the endorsement doesn't specifically say negligent acts or omissions. It says acts or omissions. So it is conceivable that the negligence of Bingham could arise from an act or omission of, or it's conceivable that the accident for which Bingham is being held liable arose out of an act or omission. But in order for Bingham to have liability, to be indemnified against by First Mercury, High Desert, or otherwise, there would have to be negligence on the part of Bingham. And once we get to that, then I think that triggers the statute 5671, which says simply that you can't do that.
Well, let's look at 5671. All 5671 says is that the construction contract is unenforceable.
Correct.
So if the party to the construction contract that was obligated to insure Bingham against its own negligence had said, nope, not doing that, under this statute, you can't enforce it and make the High Desert do that, right?
Correct.
But it doesn't say, and in fact it says just the opposite in subsection C, that it has any impact on an insurance policy that's actually issued. Doesn't it? I mean, sub C says just the opposite, that this states the statute does not apply to the insurer's obligations to its insured.
To its insurers. And this brings us back to the issue of how can Bingham be an insured on the First Mercury policy,
because
First Mercury didn't name them.
Because it's an additional insured based on the language of the policy that says that it's an additional insured based on the contract.
Correct.
And the statute also says a provision of the contract would be unenforceable, which is only insuring against your own negligence, right?
Correct.
Okay, so all other insurance provided to Bingham under the policy would still be effective, correct?
It would be effective if they were an insured. But again, the point is, or I think the pertinent point is, in order for them to be insured, the contract between High Desert and Bingham has to be enforceable. Because that's the only link.
Well, at least part of the contract has to be enforceable.
Correct.
And the court held that part of it's not enforceable and part of it is enforceable.
That is correct.
Okay.
That was the court's holding. And I'll save my remaining time if I may.
Okay. Thank you. Patrick? He went over, didn't he? Okay. We'll hear from Mr. Fields.
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. Tim Fields for Cincinnati Insurance Company. And just, I think actually some of the points that I was going to make have already come up, but I'm just going to emphasize a couple of those, just following up on what Judge McHugh had mentioned. When we look at the specific statute in New Mexico, there is absolutely a Section C, which, and let me just back up for a second. What this statute is basically saying is talking about the enforceability of construction contracts. It is not talking about the enforceability of an insurance policy. And the reason why we know that is because when we look at Section C, it says that this section, in other words, this statute, and it talks about surety bonds, but it says, does not apply to an insurer's obligation to its insureds. So absolutely, what it's carving out is saying, listen, who's ever reading this act, you know, for notice purposes, this act talks about the enforceability of a contract between parties, but it does not apply to issues involving insurance carriers and their obligations to the insurers. And that is taken care of in Part C.
Well, according to First Mercury, mm-hmm. Bingham is not an insured.
Okay. But I don't understand the basis for saying that they're not an insured. And by the way, just while I'm on this point, because I think it's important, that the statute also, just to make sure that this statute is not interpreted to somehow apply to insurance, also specifically says that in terms of contracting between two parties, under B2, and we've raised this, it does allow you to contract and require project-specific insurance.
B2. Okay, before you get to B2, okay. I want to go back to your argument about C. Your point's well taken. The tricky part, mm-hmm. for me at least, is that A includes in this series mm-hmm. The word insure. So a provision in a construction contract that requires one party to a contract to insure based on the negligence of a party's own negligence is unenforceable. And so to be reading A and C, I wonder if they're inconsistent.
Well, I think the only way you can read them is to say, as Judge McHugh had pointed out, that if you have the second party, the first party says, you know what, I'm not going to do it. And then the other party is going to sue him saying, you didn't do this, then that would be unenforceable under A. But if the party goes ahead and gets an insurance policy, then C comes into play and it says, if you go ahead and get a policy and you pay the premium, and don't forget there was a premium paid for this additional insurance. But the way insurance works is, we all know, underwriters evaluate the risk. They assess the policy, so a premium is paid to cover not only the insured, but the additional insured risk. So a premium is paid. Once that happens, C is invoked saying, we're not going to mess with the obligations between an insured and the insurance carrier. And they specifically say that this statute does not affect those rights. And so that policy was purchased, the premium was paid, the risk was undertaken, and that policy, as the court has pointed out, there's no question that we're an additional insured under that policy, as the district court has mentioned. But I did want to come back to that.
So your position is that the policy is enforceable even to the extent that it insures Bingham from its own negligence.
Yes, correct. That's exactly the position we take. Although, as the federal district court raised, we don't necessarily have to get there because There's an argument here that ultimately, you know, we never went to a verdict. We never got a judgment out of this case from the underlying case. And the issues against Bingham, our client, were that the negligence, not the negligence, the acts and omissions, of High Desert and their employee caused or contributed to this accident. We have that broad standard in New Mexico. And to me, there's absolutely no question caused or contributed. As the court's pointed out, I mean, we've got an OSHA thing saying that, that High Desert ordered this guy to go look for this hole, that he goes to look for the hole. He's not told to use fall protection. He doesn't use fall protection. He is the one, the employee of High Desert, who falls through. So there's just absolutely no question that, that it is covered under the language of caused or contributed, and that's why there absolutely is covered. But we would go a step further. We don't necessarily have to get there, but a step further saying that our negligence is covered under that policy. It's not barred, and this whole statute never says we're voiding an insurance policy. What it talks about is whether a particular contract between two parties could be potentially voided. And then finally, and I keep on coming back to it, is we think the type of policy this is a project-specific policy specifically allowed to be even contracted for under B2, because we know this is a specific project to build a single store in Farmington, New Mexico, and we know that the policy is tied on the additional insured, saying it relates to the written agreement. The written agreement is for only one store, so it's project specific. And here's the kicker. If you look at B2, it says project specific insurance, you can contract for that, and it talks about owners or contractors protective insurance. If you look at the policy endorsement, it says contractor owner endorsement. See if I can find that, but it's noteworthy because it's page 179. I think I'm messing up a little bit on the pages, but I believe it's the bold pages, page 179, and at the top it will say, not that one, it's the 183, where it says owner or contractors. I just want to make sure I'm on the right page, 183. So this project-specific policy that is specifically allowed to be contracted under New Mexico law specifically talks about owners or contractor protective insurance, and the endorsement that is specifically made by First Mercury, and which, by the way, High Desert had to pay for as part of its premium, says owner or contractors. So we have a specific endorsement that is tied, saying that you can even contract for that in New Mexico.
Let me ask you about the B2 argument, and I understand that you present it well in your brief, and you present it well today. The tricky part of this argument to me is is that under B2, your argument is that a construction contract can include a project specific policy, mm-hmm. and you make an argument based on some similarity in language that this was a project-specific policy.
Correct.
But your adversary makes the argument, in somewhat of a different context, that this policy is much, much broader than this one construction project. Now, for practical purposes, this may be the only project that would trigger the applicability of this policy. But if you just look at the policy on its face, it goes, you know, it's for a year. It goes well beyond this one project. So even if B2 would allow the enforceability of a contract to obtain a project-specific policy, if this isn't an actual project-specific policy, if it's broader than that, I'm wondering if B2 might have been able to be applied, but it really doesn't apply to this particular policy.
Okay. And the answer to that question is I think maybe two ways to say it. Let me try the first one, which is you look at what is contracted for. In other words, the statute says what can you contract for? And what's contracted for, if you go back to the original subcontract, what they say is for essentially for this project, building this store in Farmington, New Mexico, you need to get this insurance for this particular project. And if you look at the language of the subcontract, you will see where they talk about the store, and then they say you've got to get the insurance to cover this project, essentially. And so what's being contracted for is get us a project-specific policy. Now, if the insured goes out and gets something a little bit broader, that's okay. That's not barred by the statute to get something broader. What the statute's talking about is, can you agree to get a project-specific policy? And it says, yes, you can, and that's what happened. If the insurance company through the insured gets something broader, that doesn't mean that the contract to get that was somehow avoided. Instead, it just means they got a broader contract. And then we go back to paragraph C, which says, listen, if there's a policy out there, this statute absolutely does not affect the rights of the insured versus the insurance carrier. So that you have your obligations. So what's basically going on here is that you're trying to have First Mercury. First Mercury's trying to get out of its obligations to its insured, which is Bingham, and trying to get around the statute, which doesn't speak anywhere about the obligations under the insurance policy. And by the way, that section F that's mentioned in the statute, remember that at the end it says, except as provided above, which means subsection C, which says, by the way, this doesn't apply to insurance. And by the way, if you guys want to, under B2, to go out and find have a contract to get a specific policy, we're going to even enforce that contract to do that. So this really rests on New Mexico law, which is broad. I don't think we even need to get in the issue unless the court wants to, but it's clear that the First Mercury policy is primary. I mean, there's an endorsement that says it's primary and non-contributory. So I don't think we even need to go there, but I just wanted to raise that issue. And our policy says it's excess where there's another policy that's primary, and we don't have to pay, you know, defense costs. So I think the court got it right, essentially, but the one thing we've added in our cross-appeal is just we don't even think that it rules out our negligence being covered, and you don't have to have the negligence of the underlying party, because that's reading into stuff into the policy that's not there. It's just absolutely, and all the basic tenets in New Mexico are the same, which is you read the policy language as applied, and you basically give every reasonable inference you can to the insured. So I don't know if there are any other questions. Otherwise, I think if there's any other point that I want to make, I think I've made all the points I want to make.
Okay, thank you. Yes. Mr. Simon, you did use up your time, but I'm going to give you one extra minute. And in the absence of questions from my colleagues, I'll ask you to try to keep it to a minute.
Sure. I would just have one comment, Your Honors, which is that the exception for project-specific insurance policy refers to the insurance policy, not to the contract between Bingham and High Desert. The Bingham High Desert contract was for one project, but the insurance policy is not a project-specific insurance policy.
Well,
it never even mentions the project.
Well, after saying that, I actually have a question about that particular argument. Because B specifically starts out a construction contract, not a policy. A construction contract may contain a provision that or shall be enforced only to the extent that it requires a party to the contract to purchase a project-specific insurance policy. So I don't really see how you can argue that B2 is prohibiting anything about an insurance policy. It's prohibiting it's specifically saying that a contract can allow the parties to require a project-specific insurance policy, which your adversary says that's exactly what was obtained pursuant to this contract. What's wrong with that?
I think what's wrong with it is the statute allows them to go that far. It allows the subcontractor and general contractor to agree that the sub is going to buy a project-specific insurance policy. It does not allow the subcontractor to buy a general insurance policy and name the other party as an additional insured. I think that's the distinction.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. This matter will be. This matter will be submitted. Thank you, both counsel, for your excellent advocacy in your briefs and today.